So welcome everybody. Sorry once again for the whiplash. We're jumping all around the history of Jews and Judaism in the United States. And we were talking about Sandy Koufax. So we were hanging out in the '60s, the 1960s, that is. And now we're going to take our DeLorean and move back into the 19th century, the 1800s, and look at the 1860s about a curious invention called the Purim Ball. We're actually in 2 weeks of Purim here. Next week, I think we're gonna talk about gossip about the history of Purim spiels, and how they migrate from Europe to the United States. I have a very good collection of some rather irreverent Purim spiel skits to share. But first things first, here is an image from 1865 of Frank Leslie's illustrated newspaper. Frank Leslie was a very, as you can tell, talented artist. He did these woodcuts, which were absolutely sensational. It was a very popular newspaper magazine at the time. And here you have the Purim Ball, a depiction of it, a charity ball at the time, quite lavish. You see that somebody is dressed in some sort of almost like a dreidel-like thing, wrong holiday, but he has a shin there to indicate its Jewishness of the moment, and it's a fancy dress ball, something of a masquerade. They were not allowed to call it. We'll talk about that, a masquerade. First, a little bit about holidays. American Jews, rabbis, and lay leaders looked to holidays as an opportunity for revival. Why does American Judaism need a revival? In the mid-19th century, particularly after the Civil War, there was a religious declension nationwide. Jews, Protestants, Catholics of all types. The Civil War was devastating. Not just to the South, and obviously the infrastructure completely devastated the South, morale and the death toll in the North. But people were really lost. Religion had failed, so to speak, Americans of all types in the United States. Think about Lincoln's second inaugural address. Both sides read the same Bible. He states, well, what do you do? You look into the Bible and you look for answers to slavery, you can make any interpretation almost. David Einhorn, famously in Baltimore, probably misread Morris J. Rafael. Very often he's said to have delivered a speech in favor of slavery. He simply wanted to be what we would say moda al ha'emes. He wanted to be honest and suggest that he had heard enough. There was no such thing as slavery in the Bible. Had his own son, I believe, was terribly injured in the Battle of Gettysburg. He was very much on the Union side. Always like to clarify Morris J. Rafael, who was the longtime rabbi of Bnei Jeshurun, BJ, on the Upper West Side. He was Orthodox at the time. In any case, both sides read the same Bible. The Civil War was devastating in Europe. Religious leaders, the Archduke of Canterbury, the Pope, made fun of Americans. How come they haven't figured it out? Slavery was banished in Russia before the United States. Various Protestant denominations in Europe had already made clear their abhorrence for slavery. How come America, why was it so religiously backward? They couldn't understand. Jews, too. No less than Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, who supported migration to the United States, specifically after the revolutionary period of 1848, in his monthly newspaper, Yeshurun. After the Civil War, Hirsch was absolutely nonplussed about the prospects of moving to the United States. It was a place where religion, frankly, went to die, in his estimation. So, in that post-Civil War period, the champions of fidelity of some type to American Judaism looked to holidays to pour in meaning. Shabbat, the Sabbath, Shabbos, whatever one calls it, Actually, I'm thinking a lot about that, I should say, is that right now, thank goodness, Gratz College is, there's an inverse relationship, I like to say, between Gratz's success and my scholarly productivity. So right now it's hard to write, which must mean that Gratz is doing just fine. Thank goodness. Always could do better, but doing just fine. And more than just fine. We're doing good. Very proud of what we're doing at Gratz. But I'm writing a his law it's the longest chapter I've ever had to write. Not long in terms of the length, but the time it's taking me. I'm trying to write my first chapter on the history of Shabbat in America. So far, my title is Shabbat, a his an American History of Jewish Time, is what we're calling it. So holidays and Shabbat are very much on my mind these days. Holidays in particular, Shabbos was complicated. we're not up to the 5-day work week yet. That is a 20th century invention, much to do over one of the great opponents of American Jews, Henry Ford, had much to do with the instituting the 5-day work week, but that is really in the 20th century. Corralling or summoning Jews to synagogue, to shul on Shabbos, whether you were Reform or Orthodox, really no such thing as conservative Judaism until the early 20th century as well. It's very hard to do that. So rabbis and all types of leaders look to the holidays to bring people back to American Jewish life. My beloved teacher, Jonathan Sarna, was one of the first people to notice this poster, Grand Revival in 1879 of the Jewish national holiday. Probably umpteen different spellings of Hanukkah. This is one of them, not a conventional one, of Hanukkah, the Academy of Music, sponsored by the Young Men's Hebrew Association. Today we call that the JCC. Grand Ball after the Tableau, sponsored by some of the young people in New York. And this is what Dr. Sarna has argued is this revival, particularly among young people. It's interesting, is that in, in Christianity is very much a top-down attempt at revival. Among American Jews, it's really young people who are engineering this renaissance. But it's really the holidays that they're looking to. Hanukkah is useful. It's usually a November, December time holiday, so it competes or it offers a parallel to Christmas, of course. And it's not just Hanukkah. Here you have, could have given you many different examples of it, but an example of Shavuot and Confirmation, particularly in Reform circles. Remember, Reform was really carrying the day in terms of religious observance, religious affiliation at the time. And Shavuos, was recast as a graduation ceremony, also in that time of year where other graduations from secondary school and colleges are done. And so Shavuot becomes where a class of confirmants, here you have one in Washington, D.C., that it would be a convivial celebration, usually marked with flowers, and the young ladies, as you see, with these long dresses. Shavuot was filled with meaning. With that, Passover, Rosh Hashanah, the holy days, Sukkot always suffered by being too close to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but Hanukkah and Shavuot really, really did become these instruments for Jewish revival to get people back in the Jewish spirit, and so it made sense that Purim also would have its attempt in its moment. Moments to become a shining light of Jewish revival in the post-Civil War period. Here you have some drawings, which are quite nice, of how seriously people took the Purim ball. So you see here this fellow is being outfitted. These are from the mid our period, the mid 19th century, the last quarter really. Of the 19th century, I should say. Here you have somebody in a top hat, very well dressed as it is, as it were, and is now going to the costume designer to furnish an outfit for a fancy dress ball. Here he receives his invitation. Mary Purim, right, already has some of that Christian trope. Mary Purim is interesting. It's not Hanukkah or Christmas, certainly. Here the man is now wearing his new outfit at the ball. But of course, there's merriment and a little bit of slapstick here as well. People are play fighting at the ball and getting into trouble, which was also part of the slapstick of masquerade ball. But here you have a little bit in the artist's imagination about what the Purim ball is supposed to be. Meyer Isaacs, who is the son of Samuel Meyer Isaacs, who is the rabbi for Sephani Jeshurun, then Shari Tefila, one leaves the other and he follows, and but most importantly perhaps is Isaacs is the editor of the Jewish Messenger. So if you're keeping tabs at home, the Jewish Messenger eventually merges with the American Hebrew, and the American Hebrew is folded into the Jewish week by a certain time. So if you're ever wondering, if you have old copies of the Jewish week at home and you realize that this newspaper hasn't really been around, no longer really is around, but hasn't been around for 150 years, it's because of that one newspaper ate the other, that at one point the Jewish week was considering its volume number tally consistent with the founding of the Jewish Messenger. So that was Samuel Meyer Isaacs, his son Meyer S. Isaacs. They were not Sephardic, but they had a certain tradition of naming convention in the Sephardic tradition of father and son. He was a young man in the 1860s, unmarried, and here is his diary. What I'm not showing you in the diary, just because it's there. If anybody would like it, I'm happy to send him a copy. He, at one point in the diary, encounters an aspiring actor, and that gives you a sense of Isaac's cultural purview. He encounters a brilliant young actor named John Wilkes Booth. In 1862. He doesn't comment what happens in 1865. But he did identify Booth as a talented actor at the time. Anyway, so this is somebody who's a society man, is Meyer Isaacs. And he in his this these are transcripts of his diary from the American Jewish Archives. And it's just a snippet. He is very involved. He's one of the founders of the Purim Association of New York City, a group of young men mostly who see to it an opportunity to inject a Purim ball, an annual Purim ball, to escalate and elevate not just the religious identity of American Jews, but also somehow give them a gift, which is an event that would be part of high society in the New York scene. Everybody has a kind word to say about the Purim ball. It was really the most stylish and brilliant of any they have seen in 1863. This is the second year of the Purim ball, when for the first time the Academy of Music was occupied for a masquerade. Later, the Purim Association, although I intended being a passive member of the Purim Association, so he's not in the inner circle, but very early on does Isaacs take a center stage in the group, I find that there are duties thrust upon me which occasion some trouble and anxiety. Then commenting, we'll get to a little bit of this, is that there was one moment in which there was a paper, the New York Observer, not a Jewish one, that was taken aback by some of the actions and the activities of the Purim ball. In any case, so where does the idea come from? So here in 1862, there is an event that takes place in February, a few weeks before Purim. Actually, it's this one first. The B'nai Jeshurun Ladies Hebrew Benevolent Society, today we would call that a sisterhood, gave their first sociable of the season on Wednesday, January 4th at, I guess it's Trod's Academy in 13th Street. We understand that a very pleasant evening was was spent by all who remembering the enjoyment they experienced at the sociables, the social, last year made up minds not to lose the similar festivities during the present season. It's now the second year that this Women's Society of B'nai Jeshurun had some sort of hati-tati social. I guess is the technical term. There will no doubt be two or three more of the same sort before the spring, and we throw it out as a suggestion, which in our opinion is a pretty good one, that Purim night should be selected as the occasion of a good fancy dress ball. So this is in the pages of the Jewish Messenger, that by the 1860s, Meyer Isaacs was already playing a very prominent role of writing the editorials and soliciting content for his father, who was concurrently the rabbi of an important synagogue at the time, an Orthodox one. And he has this idea. He sees the success of B'nai Jeshurun, of this women's group, and he says, you know what? It wouldn't be a bad idea to have another program like it on Purim. There'd be a fancy dress ball after all. On Purim, people dress up. So later on, though, he is chagrined. He puts a note in Purim. We are sorry to perceive that our suggestion from a few weeks back in regard to a Purim ball has not yet been carried out. There is still time, however, to make all arrangements for a grand fancy dress soiree on Purim night, in which way the festival is usually celebrated in New Orleans, Mobile, and other cities. So there's a southern flair to it. Think about New Orleans today. We hope measures will be taken to afford the community a pleasant public celebration of Purim. When you think about New Orleans, you think about its French culture. Think about Carnival. And you have the Liederkranz. You have the idea of you have in German culture a idea of a soiree, not a soiree in French, but this idea of a fancy dress something or other. That was considered to be lower class by New York society standards. If they were going to import something, that's why Isaacs notes it, that imports something of the New Orleans French variety. That would be higher class. But again, the idea that Jewish culture has something to offer America the same way that German and French cultures have is really important to Isaacs. So here you have it. Finally, in 1862, the Purim Ball. We are very much in want of a superlative of sufficient force and significance to apply to the fancy dress ball. They're not allowed to call it a masquerade. Those things are illegal in New York at the time. On the night of Shushan Purim, it was beyond, so it wasn't on Purim itself. It was on the day after Purim. So it allows, it separates. But Shushan Purim is very useful because you read Megillah. Remember, he is an Orthodox fellow, a traditional person. So Isaacs has identified Purim. He first is on the outside of the Purim Association. He's now very much on the inside. He is the force behind it. And he identifies that you can do all of Purim in all of its typical conventional trappings on actual Purim. But there's another day called Shushan Purim, which is only held in walled cities. So, for example, Yerushalayim, to this day, observes Purim on Shushan Purim, but New York was not walled from the time of Yehoshua ben Nun. It has there, but because it exists on the calendar, it's leveraged as a almost second day of Purim, still Purim, it's Shushan Purim, and they make something of it, but not just for Jews. It was beyond a doubt the finest, most brilliant, and most successful affair of the season. So there's the season. Usually the French and German counterparts are held in the wintertime. And now the Jews of New York have their own contribution to society life. The first fancy dress ball given in our community for many years. It was a most gratifying entertainment in every respect. A company exceptionable and select, a scene at once only invited certain people, a scene at once beautiful and fascinating, a ball as near perfection as we ever witnessed, rendered the occasion one to be remembered and talked about for weeks and months, apparently centuries. We cannot award too extravagant praise to the committee, by whose enterprise, devotion, and indefatigable energy, Purim 5622, so that's 1862, was celebrated in so delightful a manner. It is usual to speak of such like festivities in terms of unlimited laudation, but we can truthfully and conscientiously say that the management, he was the management, of the Purim Ball was worthy of the highest credit. The utmost precautions has been taken to secure a select and agreeable assemblage, and the facts that not a single contretemps occurred to mar the pleasure of the evening, and further, that even the most could find no fault with the arrangements of the general effects sufficiently attest to the fidelity of the committee to their pledge that this first annual invitation Purim fancy dress ball should be a credit to the community. And they had it at the very cavernous Irving Hall in New York. We talk about it being decorated and people dressing, and we'll get to dressing in a little bit. That's important. So about 20 years after the first Purim Ball in 1862, they produced something called the Purim Gazette. I actually have an image of it that I'll share at the end. It just came in. I couldn't put it into the slides, but I'll share it anyway. At the event they passed out, remember, they had a printing press with the Jewish messenger, with the Isaacs family, father and son. So they produced their own almost like a spiel-like newspaper called the Purim Gazette. And in it, and they reproduced this in the Jewish messenger as well. Remember, they worked in tandem. And they did a funny little historical reflection on 20 years of the Purim Ball. And it came to pass in the first year of the reign of King Abraham the First, who are they talking about? Abraham Lincoln, that there was war in the land. So they weave it in to the biblicism and to the historical moment of the time. Remember, 1862 is the middle of Civil War. And there conspired certain men of renown in the chief city of Unklepsalm against the peace of the land and to destroy it. But their conspiracy, even the evil imagination of their heart, was confounded, and their rebellion was subdued after 3 years of war. And there was peace, and goodwill once more in the country, which was called Union. Now in the first year of King Abraham, there was founded in the chief city of the land, interestingly, New York would be the chief city of the land, chief for the people therein and the wealth they had gotten, so it's really meant for wealthy people, but not the walled town where the king dwelt, not D.C. And his counselors held their conferences one with the other, an association of wise men whereof the name was Purim Association. And the object thereof was to be merry and joyful on the days of the festival of Esther the Queen. And on the festival they feasted, and on the fast they fasted not. They didn't do Tinus Esther. They gathered themselves together unto the house of Meir, the son of Samuel. So Samuel, Meir, Isaac, and his son, Meir, Isaac. The scribe and the son of a scribe on the 21st day of the month, certain. Just move the zoom buttons. Goodly men and trusty to wit. The names of all the people, I won't read them to you. And number 6, I'm in the next paragraph. And they said one to the other, lo, the feast of Esther approacheth, and the fast too. Whereas we are wont to afflict ourselves and wear sackcloth and ashes. And if it seemeth good unto your eyes and the thing be pleasing, let us form a committee and give a ball in honor of Purim. So again, Isaac's didn't actually happen this way. He comes in a little bit after the fact. He's not part of the inner circle again. They spoke to Meir the scribe, and sure enough, they had it. And you see that there is this idea that they came together, but it's woven into Tanakh, is woven into the Bible. It's given a Purim-like history, but also an American history. And almost it helped cure the ills wrought by the Civil War. So invariably, there were reports every year on the Purim Ball. We did not apologize to our city readers for detaining their papers several hours beyond the usual time in order to present a full and detailed account of the Purim Ball. So they admit that, sorry, the newspaper, this weekly newspaper came out a little late because we wanted to make sure that we had copy about the Purim Ball because everybody wanted to know about it. Some may condemn us for attributing so much consequence. This is back in the 1860s. That the Purim Festival, as celebrated here and in other cities, more on that in a little bit, the Purim Ball has it has extensions and outreach to other cities as well. It's not just a New York institution before long. It is the universal testimony of the press that for the elegance and magnificence of dress and the refinement and respectability, that this is something to stay. Talks a little bit later and was less, it was not a masquerade. It's a fancy dress ball. Mentions the Liederkranz in the German circle were even greater than that. And there's this self-confidence. They don't read Megillah there. In fact, people don't dress up as Queen Esther there, and that's really important too. In the pages of the Cincinnati Jewish Press, the Purim Ball, in its New York report, the handsome young managing editor of the Messenger, Vernon Isaacs, is in his glory this week, and no less than four columns of the extent of the excellent journal are given up to a full description of the ball, who were there, etc. Please don't expect me, this is Isaac Meir Weiss, leader of Reform Judaism, to do the same. For the spectacle of hundreds of ladies dressed in all of the colors of the rainbow and hundreds of gentlemen all wearing the depressing swallowtail and all dancing, flirting, and promenading. Such a spectacle requires the pen of the experienced Jenkins, who knows the difference between these different things that I won't even try to pronounce, all these different dresses and things and the like, and he goes forth. But what's interesting is that Isaac Meir Weiss and other rabbis as well are taken aback by the Purim. They see it as a problem because where is the Purim Ball? Where is this revival of Jewish life taking place? I'm just making sure that I cover a couple of questions that I want to see if I can address here. All right, interesting point. But what's happening is that the rabbis are unnerved because where should this Jewish revival happen in the United States? It should happen in the synagogue. But where are Isaac? He's the son of a rabbi. Where is he taking the Purim Ball? He's taking it to high New York society. You'll see they end up renting Madison Square Garden of all places. And the rabbis, like, wait a second, we want to be a part of it. The fact that it's happening outside of the synagogue and it's happening by non-rabbis, society, usually men, society men who are taking it over are all of a sudden usurping what they interpret as the space, or should be the space, of rabbinic leaders and their space, which is the synagogue. I want to quickly show you, I mentioned the Purim Gazette. So let me quickly pull it up and show everybody. It's amazing what you can do. What you can do on with technology these days, and just absolutely amazing. I can let me show you this. So here is a 67-page edition of the annual Purim Gazette, filled with images here of Esther accusing Haman in front of Ahasuerus of trying to kill the Jews. Here you have this attempt to show Jewish culture as seen in Holland is this image. There's advertising, which is soap. Here is a Purim Gazette, a calendar. Because if you're going to do Jewish, you might as well know what else is on tap on the calendar. I'm actually going through it backward. And here, you have the people who are involved, quite a production, the Perm Gazette, regulations. And this is the type of thing that came out year in, year out. Again, this was sort of the style to have images and paintings, again, meant to be an instrument to demonstrate the high level of culture. Interesting here, this is important. Here you have the reports of expenses and expenditures and profits and receipts, sales for tickets. It became quite pricey, but the Purim ball also functioned as a form of philanthropy. And it absorbed a British style of philanthropy, which was not just give money for the sake of giving money, not schnorring, but use fancy events and use it to leverage for charity. So the proceeds of the Purim Ball would go to the Jewish Orphans Asylum, it would go to the Jewish Hospital, and that would be a way of giving back, but also deepening the Purim Ball's connection. It had a religious connotation, it had a cultural sensibility, but it also had a social one, where it was the proceeds were meant to support the Jewish infrastructure in New York and elsewhere was critically important. So back to the slides. So let me just quickly. So the rabbis, lost it. The rabbis, suffice to say, were not thrilled by the Purim Ball. They wanted Jewishness to somehow have an entry point into the synagogue. They did not like it that it didn't exist there, and they certainly did not like it that non-rabbis were holding it, and they were doing very well with it. So again, and Isaac Meir Wise makes fun of the Jewish messenger that it spent too much time reporting on the beginning, the preparation, and then the impact and the aftermath of the Purim Ball. He didn't want any such thing. So local items continued the Purim Ball. One last word before we part, before we again address our anxious readers, the fourth Purim Balls, this would have been in 66, will have been remembered, I think, with the things of the past. So the world goes. So it comes and goes. For the last 3 months, the officers of the Purim Association have been devoting themselves to the duty of providing as abundantly as experience and ingenuity, I think, could devise for the comfort and enjoyment of their expectant guests. They're working really hard. We get it. And their patience and good manners, good nature, excuse me, have been sorely taxed by disappointments, anxieties, and almost intolerable dunning for tickets. Now, they were forced to limit the issue of cards of invitation, so they apologized that not everybody could come. And that got people upset, so he's to do a little bit of damage control. And he talks about going on. People are coming from Jericho, from Australia, from Oregon, from Jersey City. I don't know if they're all coming from all those places. That people are coming back. He apologizes, saying that, you know what? It's supposed to be a New York institution, but we're so successful, people are coming from everywhere to take part in this Purim Ball. And it's not just Jews. It's the mayor. It's the police captain. They are making sure in every single report to note who came. We shall endeavor to give our readers next week full particulars of the Purim Ball. That is, if our reporters and staff generally reach home in season Friday morning. Public expectation is high as to the Purim Ball this year and is not likely to be disappointed. One of our leading journals observes the Purim Association, the star of Hebrew fashion in this country, that is saying much, gives its grand masquerade at the Academy on Thursday evening, the 28th. Let the, I don't even know what it says, of the masquerades look for it. And so say we all. Local intelligence, the Purim Ball, Jewish festival, a great success. This is from the New York Times. It's important, New York Times. No one of the ancient Hebrew celebrities holds a more absolute sway in the affections of the Jews of this day than Esther, the beautiful and pious spouse of Ahasuerus, in commemoration of the signal service rendered by that estimable lady to her nation on the occasion of the timely ejection, should be, or elevation, excuse me, of Haman. So it's not when he ejects, but when he's elevated. The envious enemy of her uncle Mordechai, whose daily place of rest was in the neighborhood of the king's gates. The Jewish people yearly observe the Feast of Purim. In this city, the first grand ball of the Purim Association was given last year. So this is in 1863, with marked success. The second one is given Thursday night at the Academy of Music. The building was very elegantly and tastefully decorated. Going on to the next paragraph, no less than 3,000 of our Jewish population with their friends were present, to whom the great majority were in fancy costume. A more brilliant affair has never been witnessed at the Academy. I think Jewish affair, general, program, Jewish or otherwise. The most perfect order prevailed. So it's important that it wasn't low class. In the variety of absurdities in the way of disguise was manifest. So again, absurdities, not to say that it was bad, but they were very colorful costumes. Makes note of Frank Leslie's paper. That's the woodcut that I showed you at the very beginning, was depicted at this time. And they note, did the times, and was decidedly a feature of the night, as were Joan of Arc, Old Aunt Dina, I don't know who that was, Old Mother Goose, Pocahontas, Anne Boylan, and a few other people as well. What's interesting is that nobody is dressed like Esther. And that's why it's so, the beginning is so interesting. In fact, Esther did not have the Book of Esther did not have a very positive reputation among American Christians. Why? Because it makes it, they understood it, that these were bloodthirsty people taking vengeance upon the evil Haman. One day of fighting wasn't enough. They wanted to have another day of fighting. The idea of revenge did not sit well in with American Victorian sensibilities. So Esther wasn't that popular in Christian and in Jewish circles. Eventually, she would make a comeback in the late 19th century when more and more rabbis looked to women, mothers, wives, to be a part of the rebound of American Jewish culture in the home. Okay, just reporting about what the intentions were at the time. But Esther did not rise to the level of a Sarah, Rebecca, a Yael. These were certainly Devorah, Deborah. These were the matriarchs of the Jewish Bible. Esther really did not rise to such a high station until much, much later. And even though the New York Times rehearses a little bit about the history, it's interesting is that for the first two decades of the Purim Ball, people would get dressed up like the Queen of Sheba, like Joan of Arc, not a Jewish character at all, like Pocahontas. You rarely found somebody dressed up like Esther or Mordechai or Purim costumes, as we would think of it today, at these Purim balls. You don't see that reported in the first two decades. Eventually, you find more Esthers in the crowd, but not early on. And that's what's very interesting, is that the Purim ball and the Purim itself was able to draw from certain cultural sensibilities, the idea that there was masquerade on Purim, the idea that it was meant for merriment, the idea that it was misameach, that Purim as a mandate is to make everybody around us merrier, happier, but at the same time was able to separate from the actual story of Purim, which at that time wasn't terribly popular. And the fact that the people costumed in all sorts of different personalities, but not really with Esther, was just another way that Purim was used, and this has to do with Shushan Purim and the like, where part of Purim was retained, but not all of Purim. That's really important here. The Grand Fancy Dress Ball, reported in the American Hebrew at the time, of the Purim Association at the Academy of Music last night was a brilliant success. The festivities opened at 10:30 with an elegant tableau. So it's a very light night affair, not for children. On a lofty throne covered with rich drapery and glittered with, it says, Eastern decorations, were seated the good Queen Esther. So finally, she is there, but only in the 1880s. So there was somebody staged as a Queen Esther, accompanied by the prince and princess of the Carnival. So again, it's the Jewish version of a French convention, attended by brilliant vendors in gorgeous costumes. The robes of the royal personages represented were the richest ever seen in this country. That of Queen Esther was claimed to be a correct copy of the original. Probably a poster, not a person. Whatever may have been the source of authority on this interesting point. So, continues on that it has Her Majesty's opera came. So there was some sort of British opera that came. A ballet was arranged by Signor Francisco. This was a big deal. When we talk about the trappings, there was food. There was an orchestra. There was a ballet. This was high society culture. I can't impress that enough. At the close of the ballet, a grand procession was formed. It was sort of a costume parade. And as soon as royalty deigned to dance, the hundreds of gaily attired maskers followed suit. There was a big dance and the ball was open. The regulations were of the usual stereotyped order, although we venture to think that the smoking prohibition might as well be dropped out of print. Gentlemen do not need to be reminded of it. Purim Ball notes around the same time, although it was announced that the ball given on Thursday night at the Academy of Music would be opened at 10 precisely, the usual tedious delay occurred and the curtain did not rise until fully an hour later. The attendance seemed to me even greater than the previous Purim Ball, so it's getting more and more popular. The ballet returned, and as well, later on in the article, they talk about all the different tailors and the different costume designers who were hired to help out. This was a big event for Jews and non-Jews alike. The Purim Gazette, gratuitously distributed, is a beautiful souvenir, and its splendid typographical appearance does credit to the printing office from whence it was issued. The throng was so great in the last paragraph that it was impossible to ascertain all the notable people present. Earlier in the evening, there's somebody there. Sorry, it's a little bit faded. Somebody, Patty, sparkling with diamonds and looking from a distance like a girl of 20 with the attraction. You see that Jacob Schiff is there. All of the people are there. Of our clergy, I observed Dr. Gatiel, who's rabbi of Temple Emmanuel, and the handsome Mr. Jacobs. And people are there, and they are abounding. The Purim Ball, beauty, gladness, and a brilliant success. Promptly at 10:30, so it's usually doors open at 10, festivities begin at 30, there's a sort of a program, a sort of blueprint to follow each year in and year out. Now it's called Purim Charity Ball. Charity was a component of it. There's more, here you have a lot of discussion about the flowers, the floral decorations. They were making the most of it. Metropolitan Opera House was the venue that year. Here you have, in the Jewish Messenger again, we devote a considerable portion of this week's issue. So here, there was one year in the 1870s where there was an event where things did not go well, and I only show you this because in the journal which we began with, Isaacs was rather upset about some of the accusations hurled at the Purim Ball. They had sort of had to make sure they were the French type, not the German type. The Monday evening next, the leading society event of the season will take place at Pike's Opera House. So it's now been moved. The Purim Association having now attained the dignity of their seventh ball. So this would be in the late 1860s. Have determined to invest the anniversary with unusual splendor. The arrangements are now almost completed and give promise of meeting the high expectations that have been excited. Talking about the Purim Ball and who's dressed here, and it mentions the history of it, which is important too. That didn't come out very large. I won't try to squint. but it's more on sort of the unseemly side and sort of how to respond to it. The rabbis are coming around by the 1890s. The Purim Ball, I don't think much in vogue any longer. The Purim Ball is starting to be exported to other spaces. So in the Philadelphia City News, the Philadelphia Jewish Exponent is suggesting not the rabbis here, but the YMHA, the Young Men's Hebrew Association, is holding it, which is really important. In Waco, Texas, of all places, the Ladies Hebrew Aid Society. So whereas men are leading it in New York, as far as Waco, Texas is actually, remember, Isaac's identified that B'nai Jeshurun, the Ladies Association of that synagogue on in Manhattan, would lead the way. He was actually disappointed that they hadn't. Here in Waco, Texas, it's the Women's Association that starts the Purim tradition there. And of course, it reaches New Orleans here as part of the synagogue infrastructure. And so it becomes this incredible confluence in the Purim Ball is much like Hanukkah. It fits very neatly into high society American culture. It's religious, but, and I'll use air quotes, not too religious. The problems that Jews have, and Christians more than Jews, with the narrative of the Purim story, you don't have to dress like Mordechai and Esther. You can dress like the Queen of Hearts. You can dress like Pocahontas. You don't need to do that. In order to do the Purim Ball, and that everybody's being invited also fits into the rhythm of high society philanthropy, and it supports social causes. The Purim Ball becomes this interesting way station between Jewish religion, culture, and social institutions, and most importantly, connects Jews and non-Jews very gracefully. It really hits all of the marks, and that synergy is what really propels it. And the fact that it's happening at a point where American Jews are really looking for an uptick. They're looking like all religion is, but in American Judaism, no exception. The Purim Ball becomes a really, really important instrument for the so-called Jewish revival in the last decades of the 19th century. Okay. So I always want to leave some time for questions and comments. Right. So Ben points out that Purim fits into it very nicely. Everything is about the calendar. Everything is about what you can make meaning of it. Like Shavuot being at a time of commencement about graduations is really important. So Shavuot takes on this confirmation graduation sense about it. When you have, let me just move my I just spot. When you, so I want to pin it for me at least, the video. Shavuot has that graduation season. Hanukkah is a wintertime holiday. Purim falls out when. In 19th century, when you had wintertime, that's when the later wintertime is where you have moving into spring, where you have those fancy dress balls in multiple cultures. New York being a very always has been a very cosmopolitan city, Jews found their event to contribute to high society, and so the Purim Ball took off. It was quite literally a hit.
It is fair to ask the question, revival or appropriation?
Was there appropriation?
No, I mean, it is fair to ask the question, is this Jewish revival or is this an appropriation of a Jewish holiday for the purposes of assimilation? I mean,
Oh, I don't think, I think to the contrary. I think that I don't know if anybody intermarried because of the Purim ball. I think that they looked at it as a way to give Purim a certain American feel, actually quite internationally.
I realize that my question is very unfair because I'm sort of placing 21st century. I'm surely placing 21st century concern on
Right.
the 19th century event, but I think it's still a legitimate question.
No, it's a very legitimate question. I think that at the time you did not have the same concerns. I think that intermarriage, intermingling wasn't the same level. So I think you're right. There is some absolute truth to what's good, but the point that it wasn't necessarily on their concerns. But so really, it's an interesting point. And I don't know. I didn't see those criticisms in the sources at the time, is all I can say. Shelley, you have your hand up?
Yes, I'm wondering if this is a precursor to what later on is going to be the post-Yom Kippur,
Yom Kippur
post-fast
ball.
dance, which was a way of getting Jewish singles to marry. Did it have that kind of thing? And nowadays, Purim comes out near St. Patrick's Day. So a lot of Jews who, especially single Jews, are not affiliated with any synagogue whatsoever. So they go to St. Patrick's Day parties, they do costumes for Halloween, and they also want to show whatever they think Jewish pride is by, oh, it's Purim, I will wear a costume, we'll have the friends that we go drinking with on St. Patrick's Day to our Purim stuff too. And I'm wondering if it was like that in those days. If that's a precursor to all of this.
Yes, the Yom Kippur ball is very much drawn from the Purim ball. The Purim ball really starts decades later. I think you're absolutely right. The idea of getting singles together through merriment and dance and costumes is old, much older than the Purim ball. It definitely, I wouldn't, I think it's fair to say the idea is elicited from this tradition. I think you're right on. Mitchell.
Hello?
Were the Purim balls accepted by, the general New York society in that Gilded Age, the so-called 400, or were they basically
Absolutely.
the our crowd?
No. So, it was an event which the High Society of New York, Jewish or otherwise, attended. Government officials, the people like the Guggenheims and the Schiffs would invite their business partners, and it was their opportunity to show Judaism's worth to high society. Absolutely.
Hi, can
Mardi
I?
Gras balls, yes, masquerades were common at the time, but again, it was really important to straddle what's high society and what's low class. Drinking, smoking. You saw that comment about smoking is banned at that time, which was honored in the breach. It was when the danger of the Purim ball, it introduced a certain puerile low class culture, which there were severe consequences for. And so, to make sure, by investing in a Purim ball, New York's Jews were taking a chance at actually degrading their reputation in terms of society. By all accounts, they worked hard to prevent that.
Can I say
Yes,
something?
go ahead. Please, please.
Yes, I'm the person from England. I find this really fascinating because it's the opposite of here. Here, you'd never get Jews and Catholics doing anything together. Even now, there is this huge, disunite between all the religions. You'd never get that. And even recently, people have dressed up as people like Corbyn, like our enemies. I know you're talking about 19th century, but they dress up as our enemies now, like political. It's not a jolly thing about the UK. It's about being separate, So I just thought I'd let you know. It's really interesting that it was a part of Jews in America acculturating to America.
Got it.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. Yeah, I think it's very interesting to look at like at how cultures now, of course, having established churches in England, there's sort of barriers, sanction barriers, and I wonder if that has a role too.
Yeah, but the Catholic Church is a minority and is being
Catholic
persecuted.
Church is a
I mean,
minority.
I've taught, Hebrew at university, and I had a lot of Catholic priests. They were lovely. It's not my own personal view. It's
Right.
just, as you say, and the Church of England and the Catholic Church at the moment, very anti. But that's always been the case. But to actually do anything with the Irish on Purim, I think would be unheard of. Even though they were suffering in this country, there were,
Yeah.
I just think it's very interesting.
Good. Great. Thanks for that. Okay. All right. All right, everybody. I think next week is Purim Spiels, so we'll have a little more. That'll be lower brow in our discussion. Good to have a duet almost of American Judaism and its adventures with Purim specifically. So same bad time, same bad channel. See everybody next week. Bye-bye.